everybody. Welcome to another edition of Media Bites, the Madison the Message Radio Hour. This is Ron Placone, your host, coming at you, traveling again. It is, 2014 is almost upon us, and I've come to the realization, whenever it's a new year, even if it's been an okay year, I'm just so ready for it to end. Like, I want to move on. I want to move on to a different year. I want to get a new beginning. I want to focus on new projects. Because next year, 2014 is going to be where it's at. 2013 is old news. I've never been, I really want to hold on to this. Usually it's just, I feel like life, you have good stuff, you have bad stuff. This year is no different. I've had some really cool stuff happen. I've also had some really terrible stuff happen. Like any other year I think I've had as long as I've been alive. But you always think like, I just got to get through this. And it's like, well, next year, be focused. But you're still going to have cool stuff and not cool stuff and weird stuff and not weird stuff and horrible stuff that sets you back and other breaks that set you ahead, put you ahead or not. I just feel like, I don't know, maybe I should just enjoy the present a little more, but I'm already just, I want 2013 to be over. I just want it, I'm counting the weeks that I still have to be on the road. Next week, I'm going to go see my family around the holidays. And chances are, next week will be our last episode for the year. It'll be the last Media Bites. And there's a lot of exciting things coming in 2014 for Radio Free Nashville. By the way, you can go to radiofreenashville.org, find out ways you can donate. Hopefully you were at the Groove yesterday for the benefit. It's a killer benefit. It's December 15th, by the way. And yesterday there was that benefit at the Groove that had Cat Beast Party, RFN Weekend, Under the Gun. Fantastic lineup of shows. I, of course, was not able to be there. Unfortunately, I wanted to be there. I could not be there, but I hope you were there showing your support. Because there's some exciting citywide stuff on the horizon. It's a really exciting time to be part of Radio Free Nashville. And I'm really excited what the new year will bring for Radio Free Nashville. And I guess for myself, I'm real focused on, new year. I don't want to be thinking about the old year anymore. But I don't know. I'm not working New Year's Eve this year. And I haven't in a long time. The last time I worked New Year's Eve, it was atrocious. The show got canceled because basically we were at this restaurant that we always did an open mic on. This was before I lived in Nashville. I was living in Pittsburgh at the time. And there was this venue. We did an open mic at this venue on Thursday nights typically. And the manager, the venue manager slash bartender slash whatever, waiter. I mean, this dude kind of just ran the place more or less. He was like, hey, we're going to have comedy here on New Year's Eve, because it's such a big hit on Thursday night. Sometimes we have dozens of people that enjoy this on Thursday nights on a good night. Usually we'd have a handful, but he was like, we're going to live the dream on New Year's Eve. And he had this dinner special planned where you would get a meal and the comedy show. For, I think it was a pretty reasonable thing. You got like a 3-course meal and entertainment, depending on what your idea of entertainment is, for $20. And I was selected as one of the comedians, and two other people were selected. I think just because they ran the open mic. But anyway, I brought my girlfriend because I'm like, this is going to be upper scale, It's in downtown and then there's going to be a meal and there's going to be a show. And I think this was promoted well and he has like exclusive restaurant members that are going to, hopefully they enjoy our comedy. Because some of the guys I was with, they were a little younger. They weren't used to older crowds as much. But So I'm thinking that. Turns out, no, I was totally wrong. Turns out this dude, like at the last minute, was like, yeah, I'm going to do this because hopefully some people will come in. And so he just posted something on Facebook and that was it. Last minute, nobody showed up for this thing. It was just me, these two comedians that were into stuff, and my girlfriend who was thinking this might be the worst New Year's Eve I've ever had, and that was reasonable. And we're just there, and there were like downtown festivities going on, but we were a few blocks away from all that. So people would come in, and we'd think, oh, maybe these are patrons. Maybe they're here for the lovely meal they can get and the comedy show. Turns out, each time, no, they weren't there for that. They were just there to use the bathroom. So they would just use the bathroom and then look at these just four sorry dudes and one girl who was totally confused why she was there. Like, what am I doing with myself and with this guy? That's what my girlfriend had to have been thinking. She's like, you know, it's a new year. Maybe it's time for a new boyfriend. One who doesn't have the delusion of, oh, three-course meal and killer comedy. $20 a plate, but I can get you the discount, babe. You're with a winner. I mean, she had to have thought, like, did he dream this? Did he make this up? Where they were, and then when the guy paid us, because he felt bad about the whole situation, so he paid us. And we felt bad. I mean, we're all friends. So we're like, ah, you're losing money tonight. This is lame. But, you know, you kind of got to pay us, I guess. I guess she thought, okay, well, he didn't dream this. This was agreed upon. Eventually, the chef bounced. Like, eventually the chef was like, this isn't happening. And he bounced. And it was like, okay, if anyone does come in, we're going to have to tell them that the meal's not happening. But if they want to just stick around for free, we'll entertain them with a microphone in our hands. Pretty much, I mean, chances are it'd be less than five people. The rule of comedy I always followed, if it's less than five people, it's just a conversation at that point. That's all it is. It's a conversation. But, you know, whatever. So that was the last time I, quote, worked on New Year's Eve. And I don't really want to do it again. I mean, I just haven't had the right situation to do it. I was offered something last year. It was too far. And the money, you know, it should have been more money for New Year's Eve. And it wasn't. So I was like, ah, you know, I'm just going to enjoy my time off. And this year, I just didn't really look. I'm like, if someone offers me something cool New Year's Eve, I'll consider it. If not, I'm not going to seek it out. I wasn't offered anything real cool. So I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to chill. I'm going to enjoy my New Year's Eve. I'm going to be back home in Nashville for New Year's Eve. So if you know of anything cool, let me know. Drop me an email. Because I'm still kind of open. Everything is more expensive on New Year's Eve because it's that they up the prices because they just want you. They realize that they can up the prices. It's what I call the you don't want to feel like a loser fee. Like, it's that one day of year where you're like, I have to go out, even if it's something weird and overpriced and something I wouldn't do normally. I just have to not be alone. So they're like, well, let's jack up the prices, because any given metropolitan area, or even any given area for that moment, they have enough introverted people that because of this societal norm on New Year's Eve, will be like, we got to do something for New Year's Eve. We can't just be alone New Year's Eve, even if it's going to cost us more money than it should. Even if normally there's a $5 cover at this club at best, it's going to be a $25 cover. And our alternative is sitting at home alone watching the festivities in New York. Which, I mean, if you ever watch it, the thing is miserable. The thing is just completely miserable. It's just a bunch of celebrities talking about the same stuff. It's like the news, basically. Just a bunch of good-looking people reiterating the same fluff. Yeah, you know, it's cold and somebody probably peed on someone else, but it's New Year's Eve and this is New York. Derp-a-derp-a-der. That's the whole thing. I don't know how Dick Clark did it all that time and wasn't like, this is fake and phony and I never want to do this again. Don't get me wrong, if I was offered a gig Times Square New Year's Eve, I'd be there with bells on and I'd think it was the coolest thing in the world. because I'm just as big of a hypocrite as anyone else. But, I mean, as a consumer, I'm like, ugh, who would do this? Why? I don't know. My guest today is a very funny guy, a comedian friend of mine, who I came across coincidentally. I didn't know I was going to be working with this guy, but we're buddies. A very funny dude named Bill Baranque, who has a history in the broadcasting field, so we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about a lot of cool stuff. So without any further ado, please welcome to the show Mr. Bill Baranque. You're listening to Radio Free Nashville, 107.1 FM, Media Bites, the Madness and the Message Radio Hour, and I'm Ron Placone, your host. So my guest today is Bill Baranque. He is a very funny comedian, and we've crossed paths a couple times. Crossed paths recently in Louisville at the Comedy Caravan. Didn't even know I was going to be working with him. That's how this industry works. You get surprises, right, Bill?
You know, the weird thing was, is I was kind of a last-minute add to the show. That's how important I am. And they told me I will be with Ron Placone, and I couldn't find any other job. So, yeah.
Did no, they, really, they mentioned it?
They did. I asked specifically.
Oh,
I think he was trying to hide it.
Oh, right. Yeah, he was trying to cover that up.
But no, like, when did we meet? Like 2 years ago, year and a half ago in fabulous Youngstown, Ohio?
Yeah, I think it was it was 2012. It was a year ago, I think. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. In Youngstown, Ohio, they got a little club there called the Funny Farm.
It's actually growing, and I don't know how many listeners get up to Youngstown, Ohio.
I doubt
actually,
any of them.
Actually, Austin Town.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
downtown
yeah.
Austin Town.
Well, you need to specify, because in Nashville, they're very... They always go to the Mid-Atlantic, because, well, you know, they need a vacation.
Well, because you need some they entertainment. Need,
yeah, they're like, you're Nashville,
gotta go
to Ohio.
What am I going to do? Lots of people vacation in Austin Town, and they go to the basement of a restaurant for a good time. I'm just saying.
I'm glad the club's... I hope to get back there at some point when
it's fun.
You know, yeah, there for the holidays.
They're growing. They're getting more crowds.
Good,
it's kinda cool.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. It's a fun club, run well, like, nice people. I enjoy it. I was talking about, like in my intro this week, I was talking about how at the end of a year, I'm always just ready for the year to be done and ready to start on another year. Even though any given year has good stuff and bad stuff, like, that's how life works. So, are you working New Year's Eve?
I am.
You are?
I have this whole thing where I cannot be not working New Year's Eve.
Okay.
Because I think I'll be incredibly depressed. And I start get stressing out about it in October, November. And then my career is such that when I get an offer, I can't turn it down. That's how insecure I am. And so I'm hosting a show, which at a fantastic club at the Cleveland Improv. But then you're like, oh, man, there are all these holiday parties, there are all these things where you can work and do whatever. But I just, if I have to entertain myself, and I think this goes for any weekend, I'm in trouble.
Well, what is, are you just doing New Year's Eve, or are you doing the whole
the
holiday
week?
The whole week. Oh, all right. Well, that's a nice little holiday
week. Well, let's
week,
not
then.
Forget how important I am.
Yeah, right. Good
people
point.
People demand, I mean, with Bill Baranque, you're demanding, give me 10, 12 minutes while people are being seated and getting their drinks, and don't offend me too bad, and it's good.
There you go. Who are you working with, do you know?
Brad Williams, who I've never worked with before, who I hear is hysterical. And my buddy Warren B. Hall, just out of curiosity, he's coming in from Chicago to feature. So, which I haven't worked with him in eons. So that'll be really cool kind of hanging out with him. Not that it's not cool to hang out with you.
Good save.
It was totally insincere, but I think I made an effort. I think I should get
You made
something.
A good effort. You made it was the same effort I made for your hummus earlier in the week. We were at a grocery store, and they didn't have the hummus that Bill
right.
liked to buy. And he was like, oh, no. And it was tragic. And I was like, I know, man. I totally feel your pain.
Here's what kills me. I don't know if this happens to you, but I have noticed whether it's shampoo, deodorant, and now hummus. Something that I really love, a specific brand, always seems to get discontinued.
Yeah, you know...
I think there's, like, Baranque likes it. That's not enough.
Let's not do this.
Or they're worried I may say something on stage to my 13, 14 followers, and it could get out and take them down. So, like, we don't want Baranque involved.
Yeah, I think you got a good theory there.
Is this more of your sarcasm again? Because I don't know how much more I can handle. No, there is this Athenos hummus. Check it out. Go to your grocery. If you see it there, grab all of it you can, because I swear it'll go away. And even on, because I'm such a worldly, well-read person that I go to, like, Huffington Post, and they rated, like, the best hummuses, store-bought hummuses, over-the-counter hummus, I think is what it's called. because I can't afford the prescription hummus. And they had this as one of the top 10 brands. I'm okay. Like, yeah, I love this stuff, and now it's gone.
Well, do they make yogurt too? Athenos? Because I want to say...
I think they do.
Do they make... Okay, all right, so they kind of just... All right, yeah, I don't know, man. I've tried different types of hummus. I mean, for me, usually the flavor is more important than the brand. I like the roasted red pepper.
But the consistency. I know, but that's pretty hot.
No, you don't like it? You don't.
I like it, but here's the deal. I didn't know this is... What are we calling this? Welcome to hummus?
Yeah, well, you know what? Let's run with it, man. All right. We started on this.
Here's the deal.
Hummus and media are connected.
There are different hummuses. I have different purposes for different hummuses.
Okay.
So, if I'm making a sandwich, I try not to eat mayo.
Okay.
Or Miracle Whip, right?
Okay.
Which, if I ever have it, I absolutely love it. So it's kind of a guilt. It's like
fried
chicken.
Yeah, no, but that's probably a good habit to get into.
So, but you got to have some kind of moisture in your sandwich.
Sure.
All right? Hummus. Good answer. High protein. I think it's low fat. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but it's high protein. It's better than Miracle Whip. I mean,
but I don't do, like, to do the roasted red pepper on both things of bread, and I got to get you the sandwich thins because I'm an old man and I get fat. To do that, that's just too much pepper and too hot for me.
Okay.
So right. I have to get a plain hummus for that. Now, if you're going to sit there with like pita chips or something and be a pig and munch out while you're watching like my favorite football team get crushed again, then I can do like a flavored, like the roasted red pepper, or there's another one that I really, the garlic.
Yeah, garlic's nice. Yeah, garlic. See, I don't really do it on a sandwich.
I'm telling, it'll change your life.
See,
I mean,
like
I know you're on top of the world now, but saying, it will change your life.
Hey, you know what? It's a good suggestion, because, yeah, I mean, like you said, I usually just go for mustard as my, you know, moisture on a sandwich, so to speak.
I will mix it up and sometimes do that. More of a summer thing mustard for me. And you got to have tomato.
Well, of course. Yeah, I mean, that goes without saying, but that's not really the moisture part. I mean, a little bit, but not.
Oh, no, what, are your tomatoes aren't moist?
Well, yeah, but...
really disgusting,
yeah,
by the way.
You need a spread. You need a spread type thing, which would be mustard or mayo and as hummus, which I haven't tried.
All right, now don't tell me you're not going low-end mustard.
No. Mustard, you make it count. Spicy brown.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. You know what? There's this place in town that makes their own ketchup.
I've never heard of that outside of Hunt's and... Heinz.
Yeah, right. And I had never encountered it either. And I don't even care for ketchup that much.
What?
I just don't. I've learned more about how it's really, like, when you really think about what it is, it's just sugar and fake. Like, there's nothing real in that
stuff. Okay, but have you ever had the sugarless ketchup?
No, and that sounds
disgusting.
Even weirder.
It is absolutely horrible.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
So that makes
That's
it
when
worse.
I realized how much sugar is in ketchup.
Right, exactly. It's just, I mean, there was, I think on Super Size Me, the guy just looks at the ketchup packet and he reads it, which is something I've never done, something most people never do.
Never.
Because, I mean, when you're at a fast food restaurant, you already don't care that much.
So when you were a kid, young Ron Flacone didn't look and read the packet before he stuck it under someone's tire?
Right. I didn't, and I loved ketchup then, too. But this is old Ron Flacone. This is old trying to be health conscious Ron Flacone that is like, you know, that weighed a lot more 2 years ago, Ron Flacone. And now I don't care for ketchup.
So wait a minute.
Because I just stopped using it.
2 years ago, old Ron Flacone was born?
I think so.
I see.
I think I got
How's
old.
How's the whole aging process working?
You know,
have you cracked 30?
No, I'm under 30. I'm under 30.
And you're old Ron Flacone.
It's a mental thing. Let's say pseudo-adult Ron Flacone. Because I used to say you really don't have a seat at the grown-up table, per se, until you're 30.
Really?
That's what I think. Now that I'm closer to that, I'm moving it up to 33. 33 is the number that's when you're officially a grown-up.
See, I was absolutely backwards. When I was younger, I always was like, no, I'm a grown-up.
No, really?
Oh yeah.
Oh, I don't want to be a grown. I mean, maybe when I was like 18, I was like that. But now, I'm between 18 and under 30.
Well, let me get this straight. For you, does grown up mean senior citizen bingo bocce ball? Is that your whole perception of it?
No,
just caring about others and world issues. We're like, ah, I'm young, Rumpelgone. I can be a selfish
person. No, because I was doing that in college, you know? I mean, I was pretty, you know, tuned into news and stuff and issues when I was in college.
Were you active, like, boycotting ketchup plants and stuff?
No, I was indifferent
to ketchup.
Take away
the sugar!
I attended a lot of war protests when I was in college. You know, stuff
what
like that.
What war was going on?
Iraq.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I was you know, engaged in that stuff. I was more of an idealist than I am now. You know, I'm a little more cynical.
Now you're totally corporate?
No. Oh, no, not at all. Actually, if anything, I'm
because I look at you and
away.
I think, this is corporate.
This is corporate Ron.
Old corporate Ron Placone. Are you going to go from old Placone to corporate Placone?
I don't know if that'll ever happen. I don't know if that'll ever happen. I mean, if a corporation wants to hire me to do comedy...
You'll totally sell out?
I'll take their money in some cases.
And then you'll turn around and use it to pick at them. What if Heinz Ketchup hires you in your home of Pittsburgh?
Oh, I'd do a gig for Heinz. If they were like, we'll pay you in product, I'd be like, no. We'll give you a lifetime
supply.
They
gotta have other products.
Yeah, but, I mean, come on. Pickles? I don't want... Maybe a year
supply
of pickles.
You know what? The bread and butter pickles are really good.
Oh, see, that's what
everyone
I don't like.
Everyone goes dill.
I
really?
Like dill. Yeah, I like dill. I like dill. And you know what?
You know what? I think you are now old Ron Placone. That's an old,
real?
That's
that
an
what
old
it
person
is?
Pickle.
But that's always been my pickle. I've never liked bread and butter, even as a kid.
You've got a lot. You've got ketchup and pickle issues.
Yeah, there's something
seriously
happened at some point.
At some point, please, someone recommend a good therapist in Nashville that specializes in condiment.
Condiment withdrawal.
Condiment therapy.
Condiment therapy.
Well, we can rebuild him.
Here's my thing. Like, first of all, with pickles, my aunt makes them. And her pickles are so excess. I mean, it's like, you know, she
I've
grew.
Never heard of anyone making pickles outside of, like, the Andy Griffith Show.
No, my aunt makes them, man.
How old is your aunt?
She's, like, 50.
She's too young to be pickle making.
Why?
I always picture it, like, mason
farms?
Jars in the basement.
That's what she does. She has a very nice little garden. I mean, it's not a farm, but they have a lot of acres, and this is in western PA. So they have a lot of land. They grow a lot of vegetables, peppers, tomatoes, and she grows cucumbers, and she makes pickles with some of them. Some of them she just eats, but she'll make pickles with some of them and give them to friends and family.
How long does it take for a cucumber to become a pickle?
You know what? She explained it to me once, and I kind of forgot.
You totally didn't listen.
I was ungrateful. I wanted to know, but I forget the details. But it takes a minute, you know, not literally. It takes a little while. But it takes time.
She's got a special jar
yeah.
that turns them into pickles like that.
But her dill pickles are so delicious, and I really cannot... I mean, I'll have a pickle at a restaurant. Pickles at a... Right on, pickle at a restaurant. But as far as, like, other pickles...
Are you one of those you'll bring your own pickle into a restaurant now?
No, you know what I did for a little while, though? Because I said I'm not that big of a fan of ketchup. One exception to that, I love curry ketchup. Have you ever had curry ketchup?
No.
It's awesome, and it's hard to find. In this country, it's really big in Belgium. But it's really hard to find here.
Belgium? Why would it be? I would have thought, like, Egypt.
Well, in Belgium, like, fries are, like, the big thing.
Really?
Like, yeah, like, you can go, and I have a good friend who is actually a Belgian comedian, and he'll come over to the States every so often to do comedy in the States, you know. I mean, he has
And
to,
would he, like, an exchange thing, bring you curry and you would give him pickles? And you
no.
feel like you had an international moment?
Well, he taught me how
world.
To cook a few things, which was pretty cool. Like, he taught me how to make this Flemish stew. But he explained, like, fries are like a social thing. Like, you'll go to the bar and you'll just get a big thing of fries, which I guess
oh.
we do something similar here, but it's a little more, like, universal, I guess.
I will say, I really think that fries are one of the most overrated food in America.
Well, they're easy and they're accessible.
Right, but they're not. Well, people are like, oh, fries. I'm like, no, to me, they're ketchup sticks. It's like, this is a good excuse for me to have a lot of ketchup or, like, barbecue sauce or, like,
yeah.
A1. Ugh, love that stuff. Don't tell me how much sugar's in that. But I'm like, the fry itself, although sweet potato fries are pretty good.
Yeah.
But a fry, and it was like, oh, McDonald's fries, let's say, or whatever. And then Burger King's, oh, we have a better fry. I'm like, they're not that great.
No, I agree with you there. I mean, the last time I had fries from, you know what? The fries I used to be okay with were Wendy's. And then the last time I was at Wendy's, which I was just there because I was in a hurry and needed something in my stomach and was traveling. That's the only time I'll ever go. But I got, now that they advertise, like, we do sea salt in our fries now. I don't
sea
know if you
salt
saw
is
this.
Better.
Well, that's, but the way it is, though, is that they're so, their fries are so much saltier than they used to be. At least
people
to me.
People love their salt.
See, I don't. Well, I didn't. I mean, I used to like their fries because they weren't as salty as the other ones. Now, they're just, if not more salty than all the other
ones.
You
know
what
you
do? I think they're just gross, you know?
You cover it in ketchup.
Yeah, I mean, see, that,
which
oh,
you can't
it's just
do in a
nasty
car.
To me. I mean, it's just sugar,
that's
salt,
all.
Just
fries
going right
are totally
in your veins.
Overrated.
I mean, yeah,
totally overrated.
Fast food fries, at least.
Fries in general. I mean, I understand the big cut potato wedges, but I don't call that a fry. That's a potato wedge.
All right,
totally
fair
different.
Enough. Okay, so you're very
distinguishing. And you can bake them, and they're still baking. I mean, your all-right things that you throw in the oven, better than fry.
All right.
But still, to me, just drop it in ketchup. Or, I guess, curry.
Curry ketchup. This is, now, the curry ketchup is delicious. I did go through a phase where me and my, because my girlfriend got hooked on it too. We would sneak curry ketchup in her purse and use it at a restaurant. Which I guess they probably wouldn't care.
You are dangerous.
Yeah,
is what it is.
Living on the edge. You know, I've toned down. Old Ron Placone doesn't do that.
Because he's gone corporate.
That was young.
You know, young Ron Placone was taking on the world one cup of curry at a time. But not now.
Not now.
You're soft, man. I hate it when, like, young, active people just get old and just give in.
Yeah, that's what happened with me, I guess.
You know what? You're a shell of the man you once
were. I guess so.
And you're not even 30.
I know. Jeez. Yeah. What is the future hold?
Start telling me about how it's going to rain because you feel pain in your knee.
I think it's going to rain, but I don't think it has anything to do with me having pain in my knee. But so let's talk about your history in broadcasting.
Yes.
I want to bring this to you. By the way, you're listening to Radio Free Nashville, 107.1 FM, Media Bites of Madison, the Message Radio Hour with Ron Placone. And no, I'm not going corporate. Don't call the station. Tell them they got to discontinue my show. I'm not going corporate.
Wait a minute. One more time. Who came up with a name? Could you get a longer name for your show?
Media Bites, the Madison, the Message Radio Hour with Ron Placone.
No, that flows. That's good.
Thank you.
It's catchy.
There we go. No, it's, I guess, I never thought about how long it was. Oh, well. I mean, it's just Media Bites for short, but I like to do the full whatever.
Because you got to get your name in, because it's
the station ID and that sort of thing. And, you know, Bill's been in broadcasting a long time.
Woo!
Listeners,
huge.
My guest here, Bill
huge.
Baranque. So I'm tapping into his genius.
Of a failed career.
Well, I wouldn't, no, you had a pretty long run. I mean, right?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
We never really talk shop about this. But you know, I know it's your background, so let's start now. So you got into broadcasting, what was it, 90s or was it?
Yeah, it was, actually no, 80s.
Okay.
Cause, while I was in college, I started working part time for a country radio station.
Where'd you go?
University of Cincinnati.
Okay.
Horrible broadcast program at the time. I think it's gotten better. As a matter of fact, we celebrated one time in the broadcasting wing, there was a pipe burst from the snow and stuff, and so that was the only way we could get new equipment. So it was a big celebration.
Wow.
Yeah, the head of the department, everything, is like, we had a flood.
Oh, wow.
God is good.
That's kind of funny.
And the funny thing is the broadcasting wing at the University of Cincinnati was inside the College Conservatory of Music, which is one of the best music schools in the country.
Yeah.
So every school says that, whatever. But they're like the bastard stepchild of it. And the requirements to get into that school are so incredibly high. And I was a very proud average student in high school that I got turned down the first time. I got turned down the second time after I interviewed with the dean. He said, I have a good feeling about you. Your grades aren't what we want, but I think you should be in this program. And then I finally got into my third time, like transferring from arts and sciences or whatever. And I looked around and I'm like, really? It was that hard for me to get into this program.
Hmm.
And the reason I went there is because I was so lame, and my dad is a college professor, so I got free tuition there. And it was basically like, okay, look at your grades, really. Where else are you going to go?
So are you from Cincinnati then?
I grew up there, yeah.
Okay, all right, so you grew up in Cincinnati, and then you started working at the country station.
I went out, I did weekends at Georgetown, Ohio. By the way, if you're going to go and vacation in Youngstown, you want to swing through Georgetown. It was Word Country, W-U-R-D.
Okay.
And I did like a long Saturday shift, drove back as like an hour and change from the university. And I went back and did Sunday nights. And the cool thing was Sunday nights, part of my responsibilities, because it would sign off at midnight, it was to take out the trash. And I had this old Scirocco, really a cool car back then, which you don't, you're looking at me blank because you don't even know what it is.
I don't.
And I need a new muffler, couldn't afford it. And I remember one night to take out the trash, you look through the door and had like a glass thing, and there was a skunk staring at me.
Ooh.
And I'm like, all right, how am I going to pull this off? So it was pretty terrifying. That was my, that's my fondest memory of doing weekends at Word Country.
When was your shift? Like you said weekends, but was it like the
Saturday was
shift,
like
or?
11 to 6 and Sunday was 7
p.m.
to
a.m. or
a.m. to p.m.
a.m. to p.m. Okay.
And then the Sunday was 7 to midnight.
Okay. All right. So that's not that bad of a shift in regard. I mean, at least it's not like overnight and you're in college. And
no, but here's
Saturday
what happened.
You're at the station.
Then, though, I got hired in Cincinnati by the country station to do their overnights. It was like a split thing, and then I went to full time. And yeah, I was the midnight guy there. And let me tell you, I was pretty good because I always bragged because like 3 a.m. alone in a room listening to George Jones. I only slit my wrist once.
Now, let me ask you this, man, because I know this was kind of back in more of the heyday of country radio, I'm assuming. And so
yeah,
did you have a special name? Were you like Wild Bill Baranque?
No, you know what? It's funny because for some reason the whole programming thing was we were like all American country, whatever. So Baranque, they didn't think would work. And the morning show had a guy named Bill White on it, and also his sidekick was Jackie White. And they're like, okay, you can't use the name. You got to get him with a new name. You can't use Bill because of Bill. And on the morning show, I'm like, you got two Whites on the same show. So I became Kurt Evans.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
You got a total
Kurt with
pseudonym.
A C, because C is cooler, just for all the autographs I knew I was going to have to sign.
Wow. That's interesting.
Continuous country favorites, 10 in a row.
Oh, wow. Oh, you still
well,
can
the thing
do
is,
it
was
man.
Cool for a while because my boss was really progressive in that he wanted more personality. And then we were sold, and the new people are just like, except for the morning show, it was all liner card time of radio where you just pump the music. And it was like, okay, this is mindless at that point.
Wow. Yeah. So that's, and they were very mindful of the names. So basically, if I proposed a show, I want to do Media Bites and Madness and the Message Radio Hour with Ron Placone, they would shoot that down.
Oh, yeah.
They'd be like, that's an Italian sounding name and it's super long and no.
Super long.
That there's nothing American about what you're doing. That's nothing American here, folks. Radio Free Nashville.
Well, I mean, you're Belgian.
Yeah, you know? Right. That's right. So. Yes, I'm Belgian now because I make a mean Flemish stew.
Curry and Placone. That sounds like a morning show, actually. Curry and Placone.
Curry and Placone?
Yeah, it does.
That does sound really nice. Yeah, and I make a lot of different curries, too.
You know what amazes me, and that's what's so cool about this, is, you know, all the different options now for radio.
Mm.
And you still hear, there's that stereotypical morning show that everybody makes fun of. With
right.
The cowbells and everything.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, that's just kind of become a joke. I was driving, I have to do a lot of stuff where I'm driving around town for this part-time job that I have, and we're driving back and through like Columbus, Ohio, and they still have like a T-Rex and Bubba in the morning, like playing afternoon promos. I'm like, you've got to be kidding. This is like a stereotype that we all make fun of, and it's the same old yuck, yuck, whatever. It's still going on.
We were having that discussion yesterday when we were, you know, like walking around or the other day, and yeah, I feel like morning radio is such an untapped medium, and maybe it used to have more teeth, so to speak. I don't know, you know, but, you know, hopefully, hey, here at Radio Free Nashville, we're getting ready to go citywide. Hopefully, we're going to change some things, you know.
Well especially, see. I think this one.
This media
this one
that,
show is
this
gonna,
one show.
No, this
gonna,
episode right here.
This episode.
is going to just change, because you said, you know, you can't wait for the year to end to flip over. Because everyone knows there's such a huge difference between the 31st and January 1st. Everything changes. This one show is taking you right to mediocrity.
Especially, yeah, especially a monumental year like 2014. Such
oh,
a
yeah.
unique number.
So much is going
to
be different.
Yeah. But, all right, so let's get back to you. All
yes,
right, so
let's always
you,
come back to
you
me.
You graduate, and when did you go into TV then?
I was looking into going into TV, and I thought I was going to make this I'm one of the huge, you know how everyone says if I could go back, I wouldn't change a thing?
People say that, yeah.
What a load of crap. I would change
okay.
so much.
Right.
And I was, I don't know if you know who Tom Brenneman is. But
I've heard that
he's an announcer for Fox.
Okay.
He's one of their top play-by-play guys.
Okay.
And his dad's the play-by-play guy for the Reds. We graduated high school together. Really
okay.
cool guy. And it was like when we went off to college, he went to OU, I went to UC, and we were kind of mirroring each other what we were doing. But he got his first job in TV, I got mine first in radio, and he was at the NBC affiliate in Cincinnati, which at the time was number one. Jerry Springer was the news anchor, by the way.
Oh, wow.
He was actually really good. But anyway, so I was toying with crossing into TV, and I was like, I either wanted to do sports or weather. And the only reason I wanted to do weather was not because of the weather, because at the time, that was the only place where you could just kind of have fun and be a personality. Okay. They weren't as, oh, you got to be a meteorologist. So I was talking with Tom, and he's like, look, I kind of got in. I got my first break because my dad is a big name in Cincinnati. He goes, but here, call the general manager, tell him you're a friend of mine, and see if he'll meet with you. And I'm like, this at the time, they were the number one station in town. They ruled. And I was terrified, and the guy's like, yeah, he'll meet with me. So I went in, and for some reason, we just hit it off. And the guy said, look, if you want to do sports, don't mess around with weather. Just do sports. He goes, but at the same time, because I had an audition tape that he actually liked. He goes, at the same time, our weather situation is unsettled here, and I could see you being on our staff. Well, being the incredibly short-sighted, not very smart man that I am, I'm like, I'm going to do weather. Okay. So I can get in there. And in the meantime, while I'm doing all this stuff and getting more things, he ended up getting pushed out. The new news director really resented me. And my buddy had called me and said, hey, I heard you're going to get the weekend position. So I'm like, this is gold, because our radio station had been sold. And I'm like, I didn't want to work for the new owners. Oddly enough, they didn't want me. And regardless, what happened was they didn't hire me. I ended up losing my radio job, and I had a bunch of weather auditions when I really wanted to do sports. Not a smart move on my part.
Okay, so how did all this end? I mean, what happened?
I bounced around. I got some part-time jobs in Cincinnati radio and finally took a TV job in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, doing weather for the most corrupt group of people I have ever met.
Really?
Yeah, it was awful. And I was like, you're going to Myrtle Beach? And I thought it would be cool, but it was like a low-budget. And this is right when Jim and Tammy Faye got busted.
Okay.
The Bakers. And it was kind of like a low-budget version of that. And they were like, the business manager was embezzling from the station. They found out. They didn't fire him. I'm like, what?
Wow.
Yeah, they were totally crooked, whatever. But that was like my first TV gig. And they ended up shutting down the news department. And then ended up getting another TV gig. And here we are.
Wow.
I know. How exciting is that? Is anyone still there? Do you want to go back to curry and hummus?
No, that's interesting to me. So you lived through 96, you know, where obviously the Telecommunications Act really kind of changed the way this industry works. Right. Where were you then?
96, I was in Kansas City working for the NBC station, and were some of the most fantastic times of my life.
Really?
And I was a weekend sports guy. But the funny thing was, we were, before I got there, I think I was telling you this last night, is it was a Fox station. And it was like a half-hour newscast, whatever. And Fox really hadn't caught on yet. And what happened was they did the thing, and all these stations across the country started switching affiliations.
Mm-hmm.
And so it became NBC. They had to hire a ton of staff. So I was part of the hires. The news director was really progressive in that he wanted he's like, look, I don't want to do sports for sports people. Part of the ad was, I want a sportscaster that'll make my wife laugh.
Okay.
And so the other guy he hired and me, the sports director, I mean, he was hilarious, just bonkers. He's out actually in San Diego right now. And so we came in, and we were the golden children.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing was, nobody liked us. Nobody liked the station. We were the last rated station. But at the time, NBC had the AFC football package. And the Chiefs were really good then. I mean, they had Marcus Allen, Joe Montana, Derek Thomas. It was a really, really good team. And so outside of the Thursday night Seinfeld, Friends, whatever, that's what people watched our station for. Well, since I was the weekend guy and the other guy was the main guy, he always stayed in and I would travel with the team and we do post-game shows and pre-game shows. And I was the guy out there on location interviewing all the players after the games and all that stuff, doing it live. And so I was one of the most visible people on the station.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I was good. Just because that's what people watch. And after a win, everyone watches a post-game show.
Right.
So whenever we'd go out in public, like if I was like with the news, the head news guy or whatever, people always recognized me first, which was hysterical because it would really make the main anchor mad.
That's awesome.
I know. Huh. here's this dorky little failure of a guy, and it's like, really? I'm kind of turning into the face of this place? Are you kidding me?
Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
So then it was after, so was it a result of that act that you kind of, like, that all changed for you? Like, was that how you lost the gig, or?
No, what happened was the station was still failing, and they hired a new news director. Like, within a year, they kind of pushed me out, or they pushed him out. And so any of his hires were basically getting pushed out. So you know the writing's on the wall. You mm-hmm. got to blow out. And so you just start sending stuff out. And can you hear that I'm, like, getting a phone call?
Yeah. All right, everybody. You're listening to Media Bites, the Madness in the Message radio hour. Every Sunday at noon and every Tuesday at 3 p.m. here on Radio Free Nashville 107.1 FM. I'm your host, Ronald Anthony Placone. Bill was making fun of my long ID.
I think this is great because Brian Regan has a joke about how people spell their names really stupid.
Okay.
Like, and it goes on and on and on. He starts, like, really exaggerating it, and then he goes, look at my name tag. It's long. And that's what you need a sign for your show with all
yeah.
of that.
Look at my show. It's, yeah.
Look at the, yeah. How are you going to make a poster to promote this?
I have a little you can't Facebook even, banner.
The name of this show won't even fit on Twitter.
Well, we usually, it's Media Bites. It's in big
no,
letters.
No, but the whole thing the with tag, Ronald Anthony Pacone.
Oh, well, yeah. We're going to have to. Yeah, Bill was making fun of
I
my long
ID.
I ran
out of characters.
Yeah, so I told him, I was like, I'm going to make it longer just for you. And then I did my full name. I said, every time this plays. Yeah, I did it. I told you I could do it.
Now, since you did that, are we out of time?
No.
Okay.
We still have time. Sorry. You're still stuck here.
No, please.
All right, so.
I'm going to sit here and talk about myself forever. Matter of fact, I'm going to continue it the rest of the day. I'm going to follow you around as you go to your farm co-op to pick up fresh vegetables or whatever.
Well, the season's over. No more fresh veggies. Yeah. No more fresh veggies.
You know what? I'll still be talking when the season starts.
When the season starts, you'll come visit and just be like, let's go get some vegetables.
And then I went and I was at the World Series.
Did you get to go?
Make him stop.
When did you get to go to World Series?
I was covering my first year in Cleveland. I went with the Tribe. It was 97.
Okay. All right.
So we went to Miami. And the cool thing, I'm not a baseball guy at all.
Yes, I'm not either.
I used to be, and there was a strike when I was younger, and I just never went back. And my parents are from Turkey, and when my dad, he just did not like baseball. He's like, it's too slow. And I'm like, you're nuts, because I played and whatever, and I was okay. And then I got older, and once I got away from it and tried to come back, I'm like, this is painfully slow.
Yeah, it's just boring.
Painfully.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
And I mean, it appeals to a lot of people. Like it's just.
Well, their whole thing, you know, but this is what kills me. I think, and I loved it because actually when I was in Kansas City, one of the guys I worked with, really cool guy, he was like producer and then reporter, baseball traditionalist, loved it. So it was just fun to get an argument to make him mad because it's all the downtime in the baseball. If you just, if you go to a high school girls softball game, it is a better game than a Major League Baseball game. And
why,
I will tell
why
you that? Why.
Yeah, yeah.
And not because they're more manly, jerk. No, because... Because they just play the game. They still get the signs from the coaches, whatever, but the pacing, there's not the garbage time in it. And that's, I think baseball could be a good game. It could be saved.
Okay.
I don't know, it's been around for 100 years.
Like, what do you mean by that, though?
They step out between every pitch, adjust everything, whatever. There is no, like, pitchers, what other sport, when you're subbing, do you stop the game for somebody to warm up?
Yeah.
No other sport.
Okay.
If it's a quarterback, you're like, oh, man, guy's fresh in, we're going to blitz him. In baseball, you have a bullpen. Why does he warm up in the bullpen and then warm up on the mound again? And my buddy's like, well, because the mounds are different. It's like, make them the same. You can't make a pile of dirt the same. That's mm-hmm. a bunch of garbage.
I
and
agree,
you have
yeah.
to sit. It's like, you talk about how painful it is to go to an NFL game and sit through a TV timeout. Horrible experience.
Mm-hmm.
Well, look at baseball.
No, dude, I feel
like,
you're preaching to the choir
is
here.
Just
yeah.
terrible. And it's like, you know what? And the other thing is, limit throws to first. That would be the first. If I was commissioner for a day of baseball, I'd be, first of all, the pitchforks would be out to run out by noon. But limit throws to first. It does a couple things. It increases strategy in the game.
Okay.
Because you're like, okay, per runner, I can make two throws, let's say. We got to pick and choose. And if you've used your two throws, it's like, all right, now I know he's going to steal.
Do you pitch out? Do you throw behind
the runner to first? It makes it more fun and it speeds it up. You can throw as many times as you want.
Right.
What a bunch of garbage. On top of that, why is it you can walk out to the mound and stop the game for no reason? And then it's like, oh, the ump has to decide, well, I think it's been long enough. We should start playing again. What other sport does that?
Yeah. Yeah. You're very passionate about this.
I'm angry because baseball should be a good game and it is horrible.
No, I agree. I mean, I don't like it. I don't enjoy it. I just don't. I mean, it doesn't appeal to me.
But if you just played the game.
You think I might like it?
Yeah, if they just said, okay, you can step out of the box once per at bat. You know, the pitcher can step off the mound one time, let's say. Whatever it is. You can't walk out to the mound without making a change. You can't walk out, whether that's the catcher, whether that's the pitcher. Why do you have to have conferences? Oh, this is what we're going to do. Like, the whole infield will come out, all right, if this happens. Whatever. What? Football makes change. They do it with signs.
Yeah.
That's the other thing that kills me is that they're like, oh, this guy's reading the signs. Why is that bad?
Hmm.
You know, like, oh, he's picking up the signs. If you're not using surveillance equipment, I think that's crossing the line. But if you're, like, picking up tendencies, that's just smart.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
I'm telling you, change it.
I feel you. Yeah.
If you're going to intentionally walk someone, why do you have to actually do it? Can't you be like, all right, we walk him?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I never understood that
either. It's a
waste
of time.
Why they have to, like, throw they put the arm out and then they move over and then they throw it and then they do it.
Yeah, it's like, all right, we know
you're
going to do it.
Three more times.
How many times have you seen something go wrong with that?
Yeah, or they should just do it where they're creative. Like they roll the ball.
That would be cool.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Although if you roll it, you got a runner on, he's taking off.
Well, yeah. Well, you got to be smart about it. But yeah, I mean, like, say you don't have that.
That would be
cool. Then you do, like, something cool. You, like maybe, like, you know, you try to, like, skip it like a stone. I mean, don't hit the, be careful not to hit the guy. But, you know, like, just do something.
Because,
like, move out of the way, I'm walking you. Come on. Oh, man. How many bounces did I get before the catcher got it?
That's kind of cool.
They could have fun with it.
Here's the other thing that kills me is people get mad about the body armor that a lot of batters are wearing. They're like, oh, he's got an elbow pad. He's leaning in the pitch. Are you kidding me? This dude is throwing 100 miles per hour.
Yeah, I mean, that is the thing. I mean, when you think about what they can do, it is incredible. I mean, it is incredible to be able to pitch and throw the ball that fast. It is incredible to be able to catch when a player hits it. I mean, you know, it really is. It takes to play at that level. I mean, obviously, at a little league level, it's not all that impressive. But, you know, to play at that professional level where the ball's coming 90 to 100 miles an hour, someone hits it, it's spinning. It probably spins more than we realize as the audience, and someone can still catch it. It's impressive, but it's still just, like you said, I mean, just the way the game is.
And every umpire has a different strike zone.
Right,
and you have the technology to be like, wow, you can actually do balls and strikes with the technology, with whatever the hell they call that thing. And why don't you use replay on those home runs and foul balls? Which I know they're in discussions. I don't know where they are with that now. But those balls that... You know, did it clear the white stripe on the wall or whatever? Was it
foul? Yeah,
you got the technology, and it really shouldn't take that long.
Sure.
You know, and it's like, wait a minute. You're going to complain about slowing down the pace of baseball?
Yeah,
we have to look at a replay?
Are
you kidding me?
You've addressed that.
Go to a high school girls game, you'll be like, this game has potential.
See, why not a guys game? Do the guys still do all the same stuff?
I don't know, but I mean, guys in high school baseball.
Yeah.
It's a lot of downtime.
Okay, that's interesting.
But
that's really
for some reason, the girls, it's just like bang.
The girls
bang,
don't mess
bang.
Around.
They just play.
Cool. Right on.
I'll give you 3 hours to watch a game. That's what funny thing is. Well, I think Frank Robinson was put in charge of, like, they really cut down on the, like, the time between the innings and tightening that up and whatever. But they didn't go far enough. And they're like, hey, look, the average baseball game is down to 3 hours and 5 minutes or whatever. I don't care. That's fine because I'll watch a football game for that long. But give me action. There's not as much as much BS time and TV timeouts that there are in a football game. It's so much worse than baseball. In baseball, so much worse.
No,
just play the game.
Yeah,
I mean, 3 hours.
I feel like I still wouldn't enjoy it, to be totally honest with you.
You're a bitter old Placone.
That's right. Yeah, we've established that's the theme of this episode of Media Bites.
Media Bites, bitter old Placone.
Bitter old Placone. That'll be the new tag. Yeah, that'll be
BOP. Come on.
Like
I think we've come up with some.
2014 is the time
for change. And pretty soon it's going to take off that it'll be BOP, on Media Bytes.
There you go.
It's going to explode. I have changed your world.
Well, I mean,
learn from my failure. My failure can be your failure, is what I'm saying.
All right, so let's we got to come full circle here. So you go to Cleveland. When did you go to Cleveland?
I went to Cleveland in 97. What happened was, you know, we had the new bosses in Kansas City, and I knew I was dead meat.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sending stuff around, and it's funny because at that time I sent something. There was this Don Fitzpatrick Associates. I don't know if they're still around, but they're like a consulting whatever TV thing. And they sent me on a reel while I was sending stuff out, and they called me and they said, hey, I just want you to know I sent you on a reel to somewhere big in the East. I can't tell you where it is, but they're interested. You're top 10. And I'm like, hey, you know, you're playing games in your head, whatever. And so he's like, send me like another tape of anchoring. Because when you send out a demo tape, it was anchoring. It's also a reporting. He's like, send me anchoring.
Okay.
So I sent. And then he finally got back. He's like, you didn't get it. And he's like, I can tell you now it was ESPN. I'm like, ugh.
Oh, wow.
So I'm like, this is cool and not cool at the same time.
Yeah.
So then finally I end up, this is a weird thing, is the station Kansas City was Scripps Howard. I'm being chased out of there. Station in Cleveland that all of a sudden was interested in me was Scripps Howard.
Okay.
Bigger market, more money, same company, number one station in the market at the time. And I'm like, okay, I'm in market 32 or whatever Kansas City was at the time. And I'm on the lowest station in town and they think I'm horrible. And the number one station in market 12, same company, really likes me.
Yeah.
Makes no sense.
That is weird, yeah.
But and it's so funny because I remember we're going back and forth, and I actually just got an agent. And they were really trying to lowball me, and my agent was like, look, this is garbage, whatever. But they were playing the fact that, A, they knew what I meant. They knew what I made, mm-hmm. So I couldn't lie about my salary because it was the same company.
Right, right, right.
And they also knew that I was going to get blown up. Because
mm-hmm.
it was the same company. So I'm like,
right, right, right.
But my agent's like, no, you're lowballing, whatever. And I remember when I finally, you know, they came around to a decent number. And I remember my boss in Kansas City, the new news director, and she said, you're going to love Channel 5 in Cleveland because it's very stable and they're good people. I'm like, cool. Well, I get there. 3 months in, the general manager, who was one of my biggest fans, retires.
Oh, no.
Those forced retirements. And all of a sudden, you just see all the stuff happening again. And my boss from Kansas City comes to Cleveland to be my boss again. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Now, she actually wasn't the one that really hated me, but she was part of that team, and she really wasn't going to stick up for me either.
Mm.
So, yeah, I was sending out stuff again, and then I ended up getting an audition at ESPN. And I made Final Four, and then I found out that I was not, my contract, your contract's a series of 1 year deals. It's a 3 year deal, but it's really a series of 1 year deals. They have an option to pick it up each time. And the new management called me in. They're like, we're not going to pick up your contract. I'm like, all right. And they're like, wow, he took that well. And then I got word I was final two at ESPN.
Okay.
And they had a hiring freeze and all this stuff drug out. And finally they had reopened it, right? So every day you're like, God, I need the call, whatever. And it just felt right. Like the audition at ESPN, it was one of those moments where, I don't know if you've had this, where like right before you go on, you're looking at stuff. And it's so funny because I'm sitting there and you're nervous about what you're going to do. You're redoing the cast from the night before, like 15 minutes of it, right?
Uh-huh.
And so I'm sitting there and you have all your shot sheets. You know, they left you alone to write this stuff. And I look down and you have like the monitor in front of you and the monitor on the desk. And I look down at the monitor and I see myself on the SportsCenter set.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of one of those moments where you're like,
yeah,
look at me.
Oh, totally.
And it's kind of a crack up. It's like, oh man, they can see me. I better be professional. But then right before we started, I just got this incredible moment of calm that I have never had before.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing. And I remember doing it, and I remember everything went just the way I wanted, except I fell behind in the hockey highlights. And I screwed that up a little. Not horrible, but a little. But it's amazing how it's just one of those moments. And so I'm like, I got this gig. It was one of those, and you have the doubt, but I'm like, it just felt like that's where I was supposed to be. And people always talk about intuition.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like it. And I didn't get the gig. And they gave it to the other dude. And it took me forever to find out why I didn't get it. Because I was like, all right, I didn't get the gig. But you know what? I was a finalist.
Yeah,
I
mean,
next time they need a dorky white guy, you know, because it's casting. We need a female. We need a black guy. We need a dorky white guy. We need a straight guy. I'm like, I got to at least have another audition.
Sure.
There's no way. And it took forever because they're so damn professional. And the main guy that was the main recruiter was one of my biggest backers. It goes to a committee of five when you get to that point. And basically they said, it's not going to happen because they weren't comfortable with my look.
Wow.
Yeah, so that just kind of like, and then I couldn't get a job anywhere. Heavy. It was the strangest thing. It's like, I came in second, and my whole career was geared towards I wanted to do ESPN. And then, like, big markets, it was weird because right at that time, I don't know if you remember, Fox Sports started this national Fox Sports report.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone that Fox still does it to this day, everyone they hired was very looks-based.
Sure.
If you weren't a big name, it was all look, even the guys. And I think ESPN was kind of responding to that. Because I'm like, wait a minute, you're telling me, like, I'm less physically appealing than Chris Berman. He's the Fred Flintstone of sportscasting.
Mm.
You know, but they were kind of reacting to it. Yeah, so I couldn't get hired anywhere. It was small markets are like, oh, you're from a big city, you'll want to jump the first chance you get. Big markets are like, ah, you're not pretty enough, or just you're a dork. So I was cleaning pools for like, because I was like, I didn't take another job for like a year. And then finally, I'm like, I got to do something. I'm in this beautiful apartment, $1,000 a month or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I can't afford to do anything. So whatever.
Wow. So then you decided to try stand-up comedy?
Not yet.
Oh, okay.
Ended up picking up this job at this production company. They saved my rear. And I still work for them today, 3 days a week. And I worked with them for years. And I was doing this high school sports show. And then I got to do like a magazine show just because they're like, we need something for Bill to do over the summer, and we programmed this cable thing, which was one of the most fun things I've ever done. And we won some Emmys and whatever. And then finally, after doing this show for so long, you just needed a mental challenge.
Okay.
And I was always scared of stand-up. So but I always wanted to do it, and I finally started doing
it. So when did you start doing stand-up
then?
I
need to get my brains beat in again.
Right on.
February 27th, 2006 was my first stand-up. Like, I took this workshop, and that was a graduation night.
Lovely. Cool,
and I
man.
Made it all the way to Louisville.
Yeah, I mean, as an you're opener, going places.
As an MC.
As an MC. So, yeah. All right. Yeah, that's Nashville, you might be seeing this guy at some point.
I got to tell you,
Louisville,
now,
Nashville's got to come next.
Thoroughly depressed. Thanks.
We just went through. So you're still in the industry then. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you still got something going on.
I still host this high school sports show that goes across the state of Ohio. And then other little odd projects and things that you end up producing. And I mean, my it's funny because you work a job and it's a small company. And so you know everyone way too well. And everyone gets on each other's nerves probably more than in a big company because you just see each other all the time. But fantastic people. I mean, they saved my rear. And when I was like going to do stand up, and you know, they knew I've been doing it, whatever. And I'm like, I got to, because I would announce football games on Friday nights and stuff, which is cool, but it's like, I can't get booked anywhere.
Right, yeah.
You Friday, know, some clubs would work around it and get a sub, but it's like, and I couldn't really travel. And finally, I was like, I got to travel. And I go, I'll still go part-time for you or freelance for you or whatever, because I like them. And the next day, the one that's owned by a couple, and the one guy goes, what are you going to do for health insurance? I'm like, I'm going to have to buy it. And he's like, well, if you work so many hours a week, you can stay on ours. It's like, sold.
Nice.
So I work Monday through Wednesday. And then I'm stand-up geek the rest of the week.
That's perfect. Yeah.
It is and it isn't. I'm kind of jealous, like guys like you can spend, and it's self-discipline. I got to spend more time writing and being good with like the evenings of those days I work. And you know, okay. You get home from work and you're like, God, I just don't feel like doing anything. But it's like, I mean, it's allowing me to take a loss like on this trip that I'm probably losing money on this trip.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm working to get into the club so I can come back at a better level.
Mm-hmm.
And because I have that other job, I can afford to do it.
Right.
It's like, yeah. Or if I buy a flight for some stupid thing, it's like, all right, I can take a loss because I have that other job. At the same time, it's hurting your creative process. So.
Sure.
And I'm not that creative to begin with. So it's really hard.
Come on.
So that's me.
Double-edged sword, yes.
So I'm going to go drown my sorrows in Belgian fries with curry.
There we go. Bring it
get
all
me
home.
A big
call
dill
back.
Pickle.
That was a, 40-minute callback. Beautiful. Beautiful. That's timing is everything, folks. Well, we are out of time. Bill
has eaten it all up. You know, we started strong. I think the fries and all that stuff was strong, and then we got into a depressing life story, and I think...
I wanted your life story. I wanted to hear about the history of your broadcasting career, and I got it. So, Bill Baranque... Thank you so much for joining me, man.
No, it was fun, right, man. And I will absolutely find you, because you're still online also.
Yeah, RadioFreeNashville.org, okay. Media Bytes, Madison Message Radio, Ron Placone, Bill Baronke was my guest this week. Every Sunday at noon, every Tuesday at 3 p.m.
You're not going to plug my website?
BillBaronke.com.
Thank you.
There we go.
Or BillBurrow.com.
BillBurrow.com. All right, signing out. See you next week.